again.
Now hear this. You are listening to Charlie Tricks, Remy Say, and John Boom. Come on.
I'm a rap liver, you can't quiver, the skills is infinite. A critical trait like DNA traced to function within my space of well-being. It's quality, beaming in front of you, I'm here to fill to the gap. Drive out the counterfeits and use it against you. I'm a prodigy, but evidently it ain't an easy road. So when I first took hold of the microphone to expose the code, hip-hop code, believe me, I'm 360 degrees.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
We're back.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in. It is The Fan's Perspective. I am your host, Charlie Tricks, and I'm here with my brother,
Remy Say. What's good, everybody?
Remy Say is in the building. Today, John Boom is not in the building, but he is here in spiritual form. Yeah, what's good, man? I'm feeling good. Remy Say, how you feeling?
I'm good, man. I'm stuffed. We just had a real good meal, so.
Yeah, actually, you know what? It is Thursday the 26th, and it's my father's birthday. So we were out to have some hibachi, and I got super stuffed on that, but it was delicious. And the thing about hibachi is it's all about the chef. So
how they handle it matters the most, for sure.
That whole experience. But this guy was top-notch. So Matsuya in Saddlebrook, which usually I think is a little quiet, but they got a real good chef this time.
Yeah, so, he was awesome.
Shout out.
And happy birthday, Dad. Shout out to Matsuya.
Happy birthday, Dad. Yeah, what's going on, man? We wanted to talk about, to set things off, we're going to talk about, I guess, UFC 283 just passed this weekend, right?
Yep.
So that was headlined by Glover Teixeira and Jamal Hill. Jamal Hill took the belt away. For anybody who watched that card, that was actually a really good card. A good night of fights. And that main event, man. Those two men left that shit. They left it all in there.
I wasn't that enthusiastic about the card heading in. And it was because I thought it was a lot of one-sided matchups. But first off, Brandon Moreno versus Davison Figueroa. The fourth time these guys fight. And I thought that was fantastic. I loved that fight. And then, yeah, Glover Teixeira went out on his shield, retired at the end of it, but he put on a hell of a performance, and Jamal Hill really, that was like a dude that looked, he was locked in. That's the most locked in I've ever seen him, really.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to focus in on that fight a little bit just because of how intense it was, but there was great fights, and you mentioned one of them. We'll talk about that in a sec, but Jamal Hill and Teixeira, I mean, to see Teixeira's face at one point, I kind of wanted them to throw in the towel, if I'm being honest with you. After he made it out of the fourth round, in between rounds, I was hoping that they were going to stop the fight. But they didn't. He marched on like a soldier, and I mean, God bless the man. He made it all the way through.
He had a better fifth round than fourth. Like, when everything was on the line, he put Jamal Hill into some situations, at least. Like, he did, as Hill said it, he did what he needed to try to win the fight. Just Hill was prepared for everything. So it was really cool to see. That's how Glover's been for a while now. He just, sometimes he gets beat early, but he catches up to guys because he's such a vet. And this time, just Jamal Hill was locked in. It was one of those nights. You know, certain times guys are really in the mode and they don't make any mistakes. And that was pretty much Hill.
Yeah, I know. And it's hard because, you know, I want to give all the props in the world to Jamal for the win, and I do. But I'm just thinking about Glover going out like a soldier on his shield. Like, he just, Jesus, the man is, like, what, 44 or something like that now? What a great performance, and what a role model in the sport. Just
what a cool career. He had 10 years. He challenged John Jones for the title 10 years prior to when he fought for the title a second time. He had to fight for 10 years to get a second opportunity, and he won the belt in an upset fashion, too, when he beat Jan Blachowicz. And then, you know, he lost to Jiří Prochazka, but that was an incredible fight that could have gone either way, just about.
Yeah, that was great.
And then you get this Hill fight, and he didn't quite get over the hump, but he gave these guys hell, and he's been in the sport for a long time. He's got a lot of light heavyweight records, career records, because he's been around so long, you know, for stoppages and things like that. And yeah, more power to him. That's a Hall of Famer, for real. A Hall of Famer and somebody that
absolutely
really marks, it kind of marks the end of a generation to me. He's one of those last guys left. We're getting down to it.
Yeah, did he retire?
Yeah, he retired right after.
He did retire, right? So, yeah, I mean, God bless. Hall of Famer and really put on a performance. I hope his brain is okay. Goddamn CTE like a motherfucker, but I hope the man is okay. He left it all out there. That, like you said, the Figueroa fight, for Moreno to get that to the stoppage, that was great. I know some people are going to try to blame that on the eye poke, but I really think it was the eye shot that did it. And, man, that was a beautiful fight. That was just aggressive. As long as it lasted, it was just, wow.
Back and forth.
Fireworks the entire fight.
Those guys know each other so well at this point that it was really cool. It was a fun fight to watch. You can't even call it an eye poke. He hit him. It was a closed fist. It was the thumb. The knuckle on the thumb definitely went right into the guy's eye, but that's a legal punch. You know what I mean? You can't help that. He had a closed fist when he hit him in the eye.
Yeah, so a couple other fights. Andrade beat the ever-loving crap out of Lauren Murphy.
Everybody kind of expected that, but it was...
Oh, man, that was... Jesus.
So,
I mean, shout out to Lauren Murphy. She is always a fighter and brawler, and she does not quit, but the ass-whooping that Andrade put on was... Woo.
What I'm thinking is, you know, we just spent 5 minutes talking about Glover Teixeira and how heroic it was and how tough he fought. And, like, Lauren Murphy kind of did the same thing. She got the shit kicked out of her.
But
she
Glover got her ass beat, bro. Made but it, Glover made it a fight, like an ugly fight. I mean, Lauren...
She tried. She threw some
stuff out. Let me not say that. Lauren made it a fight, but... Glover had more success.
Glover put it into... There was times where I thought, oh man, is Glover going to figure something out here? You know, is he going to get him down and choke him?
There were a couple shots where he caught him and I was just like, oh shit. But I never felt that Lauren did anything or put Andrade in any real danger.
But that's almost even more impressive to me because she was getting her ass whipped and I didn't think she had any chance, but she never backed down at all. And, like, I'm not a Lauren Murphy fan. I was annoyed at her since the Tough season. I've always been annoyed by her. But, honestly, my respect level jumped because a lot of women have quit standing in front of Nunes. And she – or Andrade. She is just beating it out of women. She knocks out half of them. And then you have, you know, Lauren Murphy just, like – on some little engine that could, I think I can. And nobody expected anything to come of it, but at least she gutted it out. She made it all the way to the wire and made Andrade earn it. So I respect that a lot.
Yeah, I mean, that's another one. I just hope her brain is okay.
Yeah, for real. And two...
She's too tough for her own good, you know.
Two fighters, the Bonfim brothers. I can't even remember their first names off the top of my head. But I think one debuted and one I had seen before, and they just had really impressive performances. Terrence McKinney got knocked out with a highlight. The knockout of the month, basically, was a flying knee from, I think it was Gabriel Bonfim is his name. And that guy really outstruck Terrence McKinney, who I think is a really good striker.
Yeah, it was Gabriel.
So that... those two guys, keep an eye out for the Bonfim brothers. I really want to drop those names and just get a stamp in it. Like, man, those dudes are real. They're going to be a problem. Like, the way I was ahead on Rachmanov and these guys are putting it out.
I'm sorry, it was Ismael. Ismael's the one who knocked out McKinney.
The other one's Gabriel. Gabriel's the one I had seen before. Ismael, I had only seen, like, a very little bit.
Yeah, so one other fight to mention, which I thought was crazy, was Gregory Rodriguez versus Bruno Fierro.
Oh.
That was wild. Bruno looked a lot smaller in there than...
like 5'10".
Than Rodriguez. He's 5'10". And...
Rodriguez 6'4"?
Yeah, he is a big boy, man. And he just looked outsized and... that ended in a freaking knockout that was just wild. And it was a good fight, actually, mm-hmm. all the way through. I mean,
that was everybody expected like fireworks in that fight because those two guys are knockout guys and they both kind of do that. They stand in the pocket and they wing. they're not afraid to get hit, and they're expecting to hit you harder. And that's basically what happened, man. These guys had some crazy exchanges. They beat the hell out of each other while it lasted, and one got hit on the button, and it was Gregory. That a 5'10 dude knocking out the biggest, scariest dude in the division at the time, you know, on the come up. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, that was a great fight. That was my fight of the night.
Yeah, that fight just came straight to mind when we're like running this back. I'm looking through the card real quick. Mm-hmm. But damn, that was good. Fun night. But damn, UFC with the goddamn price. Whew. It was expensive to rent that pay-per-view. That was rough.
I'm going to have to start being more picky about what UFCs I order, because what's it, $85 now? Even with us splitting it, that's annoying, bro.
Yeah, it was tough. I was like, Jesus Christ, it went up again.
That's a nice dinner. If we split it, that's a nice dinner each.
Well, remember, you know what I mean? we're fight fans who buy every fucking event. Mm-hmm. So we're spending a fortune every year on watching UFC.
Plus the subscription to ESPN Plus is a monthly fee. You know what I mean? So they're getting us every which way.
Yeah, I know. And we're over here like crackheads still fucking tuned in.
Yeah.
The next pay-per-view is going to be Islam versus Volkanovski. I know that you're not too excited to see that fight. I'm actually excited to see that fight. I think my first thoughts were kind of similar to yours, and I was like, oh, man, Islam's probably going to steamroll this dude. And, you know, it's a possibility. But all I know is that every time I sleep on Volk, he fucking, he proves me wrong.
At 145.
Yes.
So, like, speaking of a 5'10 dude going up against a 6'4 dude and me being like, wow, he knocked him out. Volkanovski versus Islam is like a giant versus a very short dude. Like, Volk's short for the 145 division. Islam is big for the 155 division. Islam was talking about moving up to fight Usman, and people were like, that's a 50-50. And now we got Volkanovski moving up to fight Islam from 145. And I just think you've got arguably the best grappler, period, in MMA right now. Like, he's taking everybody down and dominating them on the ground, including Charles Oliveira he controlled, which is a major accomplishment to me. And now you've got a guy who's much smaller, who the tactics that I would expect Volkanovski to have to use would literally be hit-and-run tactics, which is my least favorite style of MMA to watch. So I'm either going to be bored and annoyed watching Volkanovski dart in and out and try to just, you know, do the Dominic Cruz, pop, pop, out. Or I'm going to watch him get grabbed, yoked up, and fight over pretty quickly. And my other thing is, the city kickboxing team is really good. Great coaches. What's their best fighter on the ground? Is it Dan Hooker, Israel Adesanya, Volkanovski? They don't have that, like, grappling isn't their thing. So they're going to have to come in with a really good strategy.
Yeah, I mean, all I'll say is they're a smart team. I hope that they've reached out to some of the top grapplers. I just think it's tough to make up for that. It's really going to depend on how good Volk's base was already. But I just say this, I mean, the guy has looked better every fight.
Fair.
And he's looked impressive. And he's shut me down from doubt every time. Now, I will say this. If I'm a betting man, I'm going to take the favorite and put it on Islam. But I don't know, man. I might slip 20 through the back on Volk as an underdog. You know, I just... I don't know. Not to say that Islam hasn't been tested like that, but you know that same in and out pop. I just want to see what happens if one or two of those starts to rock his jaw from a little short, fast guy, and see if that does anything. You know?
Yeah, I just don't expect. I have such low expectations of it. I really do. I really do. I'm much more looking forward to the rest of the year because of what's being built up to, kind of.
You know, this is going to be a great year. I mean,
the return of Jon Jones at heavyweight is actually signed. I never expected that to be. I always thought we were going to be talking about when it happens and then it wouldn't.
Yeah, and you know what? Considering it ended up being against Cyril Gane, I think that's actually exciting. You know, I thought it was going to be a bunch of other people. I did not have it ending up being him in my mind playing matchmaker.
If it was Francis Ngannou, that would be that's the fight, bro.
Yeah, that's
they
the one
really
everybody
dropped the ball.
That's the one everybody really wanted to see. You
Man.
Know,
yeah. But Cyril Gane's, I like that fight. That's an interesting matchup. That's fair. But I really am upset that the UFC was just like, you know, Francis Ngannou wants what? A representative at board meetings? He wants somebody to rep the fighters? He wanted a fighter rep, and they were like, no, we'll give you crazy, we'll give you more money than anybody except Conor and Khabib, probably. But you can't have a fighter representative anywhere near us in the back when we make decisions. Like, that's crazy to me. And they lost what would have been the biggest fight of the year. Unless, so the other story is Conor McGregor is again implying that he's got a fight. His coach just came out and said, what was it? Like, he said something like, I would bet my house that Conor McGregor fights this year. And then people are kind of starting to speculate on that. Is he going to coach tough again because he made a tough post? Jorge Masvidal says he's got a big fight. Is that going to be the fight? Michael Chandler's been trying to get this fight forever. So that's the other big one.
I don't know. I saw a mock poster of a tough, you know, between Chandler and McGregor. So maybe, I don't know if there's any steam to that, but McGregor did put out a tweet about coaching tough. So, you know, maybe there's something there. I don't know. But you know what slept on fight I wanted to mention real quick was Vera versus Sandhagen. That Chito Vera.
When is that?
That is going to be in February. Oh, so check this out. That's February 18th. And weirdly enough, it's at the UFC Apex.
Okay, that's a great, great fight. And I'm kind of upset that it's in the Apex because I'd like that fight to be in front of, like, a big crowd. Those dudes are going to go at it. Those are the scrappiest, most punishing strikers in that division going up against each other.
Yeah, for sure.
I got Vera, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Sandhagen a lot.
Vera's
I
a beast, but I don't know. I feel like that's really close, that fight. But you know who's co-maining that that card? Talia Santos versus Erin Blanchfield.
Wow. I think
those two fights back-to-back are big sleepers, you know?
Erin Blanchfield, Elmwood Park, right?
Yep.
Yep, local. That's what's up. Shout out, Jersey.
Speaking of Jersey, one of our show producers here told me that SZA was born in Maplewood.
That's what's up.
I haven't fact checked that yet.
Shout out to SZA.
But yeah.
Great album.
Let's see. Okay, well anyway, moving right along. I think we've hit up on UFC for
we got 20 minutes of UFC discussion. That's a lot. That's pretty good.
All right. Let's take a little break right at that moment. I'm gonna, you know what we'll do? We'll do this right here.
Can you dig it?
And take five.
You're listening to TFP, the fan's perspective.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're right back in. What are we coming in with this time?
So we were just talking to UFC for like 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, right.
Speaking of, you know, UFC personality, Joe Rogan shared some more misinformation this morning. And I saw it before it got fact checked. So I tried to fact check it myself and just got the experience of debunking bullshit, and I figured I'd, you know, take a few notes and try to figure out this process for people to see how annoying it is to debunk what seemed like obvious bullshit to me, but it's well put together how they fronted to people. And I kind of get why Joe Rogan might fall for it, even though it's kind of like lazy and you should do a little more if you're going to have 25,000 people interacting with this piece of information and sharing it and shit.
Well, yeah, just to say, like, this is useful for people watching to see the avenue of trying to figure out, is this real? Basically reading this and trying to figure out, is this shit real?
Yeah, and kind of just being like, Jesus, this sounds crazy. Maybe I should look a little more into it before I just continue to spread the gospel of absolute nonsense. You know what I mean? Like, this is very much nonsense. At this point, most of the articles that I was on this rabbit, stuck in this rabbit hole on, have been edited because they were fact-checked and forced to add in missing
content. Tell us what it is.
So let's start with the Joe Rogan story. He shared a picture of an article titled, "Scientists Warn Eggs Are Causing Thousands of People to Suddenly Form Blood Clots." And he wrote in his post, "This is either some black belt level trolling or the AI has gone sentient and it's starting to fuck with us." And then he reposted something from an author of a paleo diet book named Rob Wolf. Rob Wolf says, "Well, peas and carrots, not only will that omelet make my wind smell like Satan's aftershave, it's going to freaking kill me too. Something really weird about that, these researchers say it's choline in eggs that's the problem, even though most folks don't get remotely enough. These smarty pants insist it'll turn your arteries into mile-long Twizzler because the choline gets converted into the science stuff called TMAO. And TMAO is supposed to really get that clotting cascade kicked off. Want to know another weird detail? Fish delivers massively larger amounts of TMAO than eggs of meat. But it's only eggs and meat that these scientists blame for TMAO. Wacky. Clearly, a fair number of folks are having some serious clotting issues, but I'm pretty sure something changed with eggs in the past 2 years. I can't think of any other thing that's novel that might account for this. So yeah, eggs it is. All I can say is thank whatever deity I acknowledge for the intrepid scientists and media folks looking out for us." So very sarcastic. He linked, you know, he posted a link to the article, but it didn't actually click or anything, so I had to punch the article into my browser first to find it.
But what are they implying, that it's a cover for COVID?
Essentially, that's what it seems to be implying, that in the last 2 years, you know, something's happening, and the scientists are blaming the eggs to cover some other potential cause.
Gotcha. Okay, you know? So here we are. So the story is, this is a cover for COVID. Scientists are blaming eggs.
So then I went to News Punch, which was what they were linking to. News Punch has that article titled, "Scientists Warn Eggs Are Causing Thousands of People to Suddenly Form Blood Clots." And the tagline of that is, "Scientists are now warning the public that consuming eggs could cause blood clots, strokes, and heart attacks." Yes, really. Or no, wait, that's the lead-in. The tagline is, "This is yet another example of the global elite attempting to distract the public from the real cause of the surge in heart problems since the jab rollout." That's the tagline of that article.
Jesus Christ.
So we've gone from this dude's sarcasm implying it to this article pretty much making it clear what they're trying to say. And yeah, they link, furthermore, to an article in Daily Express's website. They're a UK website, so express.co.uk. "A study conducted by Cleveland Clinic suggested that choline could make the blood more prone to clotting. Choline is sometimes sold in over-the-counter dietary supplements. It is deemed an essential nutrient that is widely recommended for optimal health." And then they get into why choline can be converted into TMAO. They talk a little bit, but they kind of left some stuff out initially that has been added in, so I can't even read it to show you how they bullshat their way through this anymore because they got fact checked. But anyway, I read that article that they had, and there wasn't a full explanation of what was going on, but they definitely made it sound like the scientists are fronting about this egg thing, right? So I was like, okay, what's the Daily Express saying? Daily Express, a little more professional about it. "Blood clots, compound found in eggs linked to an enhanced risk of blood clotting." And then they go into their version of this same story about how this compound that's found in eggs has been linked to blood clots. And they break it all down. These scientists at Cleveland Clinic, they get quotes, all this shit. But you know what they didn't do? They didn't give a citation to the study. And there wasn't any, like, references that I could use. There wasn't, I don't even think they mentioned what medical journal I could look for it in, nothing. So they had one part in this whole article that I can't even find it because it's a long article and I got to scroll through it. But okay, here we go. Stanley L. Hazen, they mentioned from the Cleveland Clinic. They named one of the authors. So now, couldn't find it on Google. I didn't do Google Scholar because I'm familiar with certain medical databases. I work at a medical library, so I went to PubMed, very simple place. You could get a lot of free medical research there if you know what to look, how to search it. But you do got to know how to search it. Now, I was able to look up the author's name, single citation searcher, if you ever use it. But I pulled up the article that this Cleveland Clinic guy did related to choline that these people are saying says that eggs are to blame for the increase, you know, all that shit. The article is titled Dietary Choline Supplements, But Not Eggs, Raise Fasting TMAO Levels in Participants with Normal Renal Function. So I'm like, wait, I must be missing something. I scroll down to the results. The results are a little dense to read out loud. There's a lot of chemical names, but we can do the conclusions. It's a pretty quick read. Despite high choline content in egg yolks, healthy participants consuming 4 eggs daily showed no significant increase in TMAO or platelet reactivity. However, choline bitarte rate supplements providing comparable total choline raised both TMAO and platelet reactivity, demonstrating that the form and source of dietary choline differentially contributes to systemic TMAO levels. Essentially, what they're saying there is the eggs didn't do that. The eggs don't raise your blood clotting.
It was the supplements, right?
Supplements, dietary supplements are doing that. So they drew a link that these choline supplements do it, but they never said that eggs do it. They just compared eggs to the supplements so that they had, you know, a natural source of choline. And just to throw this in, that tagline was about, like, they're using this for cover, right? They're using this for cover because the last 2 years, there's so many weird blood clotting events. You know, what could ever cause that? It must have been the jab. This article was written, it was published in 2021, April of 2021. It's almost 2 years ago.
That's the icing on the fucking cake right there, man. So, maybe you want to bleep that out. That's the icing on the cake right there. Yo, let me tell you something. That whole story is really hilarious. And like, here's how you go down the steps, right? The thing started from an article that the lead fucking title was the opposite of what they fed the story.
Mm-hmm.
Then they did this kind of jokey way about insinuating it was really COVID and they're just bullshitting about the eggs.
Not COVID, the jab, the COVID vaccine. The jab, they right, never the jab. Consider that also COVID was spreading right. to even more
so
people.
It's the Fauci ouchie. It's the jab, right? So, but then check this out. The fact that they had to wipe the website and update information from the original post means what? Why would you do that, right? They obviously knew it was bullshit from the beginning, from the first post, because they took the title fucking wrong. So why would you do that? Because you know how this works. How many impressions do they get on the first run versus the fucking what do they call it when they redo it?
Edit version.
I forget that there's a name for it. But anyway, when they make the correction, half the people see the correction. So they already got the bullshit out and the bullshit is already being spread. And in this case, even as high up, you know, as people with as far of a reach as Rogan. And in his case, I'll say like, his posting of it sounds like he's being a little sarcastic of the matter, but I don't know. It could he's leading the horse to water a little bit in this one, you know?
It might sound sarcastic, but I looked at the comments and all of the top comments were, you know, taking it very seriously.
Well, that's the sad part, right?
Falling for it.
That's the sad part, right? Is the responsibility a little bit there where like you're posting this shit. And you have a lot of people who just straight harp on every fucking word you say. So I get it, you know.
Not only that, but the bullshit, just to get into it a little more, they didn't change the headlines. They changed the bottom of the articles to add in the missing context. So you have to read the whole article, what they could get off, and then they add in, by the way, the study's only saying that dietary supplements do it. And they also never mentioned that the study is 2 years old, even though they're trying to imply changes from the past 2 years.
Yeah, they're trying to link it to the jab, and it was 2 years old.
Oh, it's so frustrating.
Yeah, and I completely get that. But the other piece of this whole fucking thing right here that you have to consider is that I could tell you right now, like 95% of the people are not going to take the time to do just the legwork that you did to try to get to the bottom of, is this an actual thing? Because this looks fishy.
That was a little bit annoying. I read three articles. Like, I read the dumb blurb that Joe Rogan posted. I went to the guy's page. Then I went further because Joe Rogan has such a habit of spreading bullshit. And I was thinking, like, oh, this might be a useful TFP topic if this works out how I expect it to. And it worked out exactly how I expected it to. I wound up at some crazy, you know, fringe right-wing bullshit website. You know, we're independent news that's for profit. By the way, we're for profit. and then with, like, you know, the crazy tagline, the global elite attempting to distract the public from the real cause of the surge in heart problems since the jab rollout. Like, get out of here, dude. Then I go to the you know, legitimate website, and they're leaving out a bunch of context, and I still don't get a citation to work with, something that I can actually look up what the study itself says. And as soon as I got to the study itself, I didn't have to read the results, really. It's right in the title of the results. Like, it's insane that they were able to get this off because they didn't post a title to the study because they couldn't. They didn't post much. The author was buried, one of the authors, not even the lead author.
Well, and that's the thing, is that there is a lot of people, unfortunately, this day and age who that's as far as they're going to go. That post was enough. And actually, more so than that, that post is enough, but information from an actual doctor is not enough. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely a little bit of, like, up is down type of shit going on with this stuff. But everybody knows how it is and has their own fucking takes on it. Another weird take, speaking of that angle, that I thought was funny was the stove freak out. I thought the stove freak out was actually, it's hilarious, but at the same time, it's kind of sad. But they're like, so let's not look at it from any, like, I'm not going to try to put, like, data points and tell you about a study or on it. Let's do it in the generic way, right? Here's what happened. Basically, they looked at the information and were like, holy shit, we just realized that a bunch of people who have stoves have way higher cases of being affected by things like asthma and lung diseases.
That have gas stoves.
So maybe there's something wrong here. We might have missed something. We better warn people. And the response to that was a bunch of people like, you're not going to take my stove, and posting videos of them, like, with their gas stove on and flame all the way high, not cooking anything, like, come for my stove. And I'm just like, what the fuck world, what universe are we living in with this bullshit? This is hilarious. The freak out game is wild on the internet. And I just think it impacts a lot of people. And it impacts a lot of people who wouldn't normally be affected by bullshit like this. But I think I guess you get trained in how to view material when you've done it for a long time, especially with, like, news, media, information. So I'm always super skeptical of everything that I intake. Everything I intake, I'm absolutely skeptical right off the bat. But, you know, you got to develop your sources and know where they're coming from. I mean, I have people, sources that I follow because I trust that they're on point. And even in those cases, I still will do a little extra legwork if I'm unsure about something, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, most of those sources are going to give you a title, or they give you a direction. Like, they're confident in their sourcing, so they share with you, this is where I got this information, go see for yourself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Citations or some, you know, give me something.
It doesn't even have to be like a full citation, like you're in school writing an essay. Just say the title of the article, say the author of the article maybe, or the website that I can go to find it or something. What academic journal was this study posted, printed in, you know? It can be anything like that. but give us something to look for to find it, you know?
Yeah, so you want to know something funny? Because I had looked at this when I was interested in the stove freak out. And the stove freak out is the least of it. The freak outs that I have seen online over dumb shit have been just some shit out of a movie. But back to the stove one real quick. I did not know that there's a huge, like, maybe the majority of the country uses electric stoves. I didn't know that. I had no idea. Because I'm from the Northeast. I'm from, you know, New Jersey, New York. So here, about 69% of residents use, or homes are using gas stoves. And in almost all of the other parts of the country, with the exception of a few places and out west in California, as much as 89 to 90% of the houses or the homes using electric stoves. So that's wild, because if you really think about, that includes a whole swath of red states there that would normally go, you know, with that same type of mentality towards this thing. And I just think that for the few people posting those, they got to be from, well, maybe not. Maybe they're part of that 12% from from North Dakota or
something.
There's
enough people freaking out that you see it, you know, so there is that aspect to it. Because, well, man,
you know the multiplier effect of online.
So. Yeah, that's the thing, because, like, these online freakouts are always so dumb. Gas stoves and electric stoves, for me, I don't cook. It makes no difference to me. You're never going to find me fighting over what you do with the stove unless you're just leaving me stoveless. I need something to cook ramen.
I need something to heat my shit up.
I need to heat up my ramen. But, like, the other freakouts have been, you know, they're making the M&Ms less sexy. How dare they make the M&Ms less sexy? What? Yeah. Take off her heels. Who cares, B? And then it was the Dr. Seuss freakout. They took two books that I had never even heard. I didn't even realize existed in the Dr. Seuss library of books. They took those off the thing. And now all of a sudden people care about these books. They didn't take the Grinch down, you know?
Yeah, I thought, didn't they take them down too because they were like non-sellers?
They were complete non-sellers. They were the least in the books that nobody cared about, essentially. So, you know, they might throw a little, we're doing this because of this reason. But really, they're probably just discontinuing books that aren't making them much money or any. Or they're worried, like, the little bit of money that they do generate isn't worth if anybody were to get outraged.
Yeah. You want to talk, switch off topics and jump on to some movie show?
Little softener, a little light in the mood.
A little light in the mood. Let's lighten it up a little bit.
Lighten the mood with something super dark as far as the show itself goes, but
a little more entertaining.
Yeah. The Last of Us is an incredible TV show. It's popping right now, so.
Actually, yeah, I have to agree with you there. I wasn't really 100%. I thought the first one was dope, but being someone that didn't really remember the game that much. I'm not much of a gamer. I wasn't sure. But the second episode was pretty awesome. I was like, all right, now I know this is going to be nuts.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so as a gamer, like, The Last of Us is such a famous, popular game. When it came out, it was the game of the year. And it came out PS3. And for me, personally, it was the best game PS3 released, period. PS4 came out, they were like, we're going to make the same exact game. We're going to re-release it for PS4. PS5 came out, same thing. We're going to re-release this game because it's so good. And you know what? 90% of the people I know that beat it on PS3 also beat it on PS4, also beat it on PS5 because it's that good. The story's that engrossing. And what did they do with the show? They're like, this shit has worked 3 times on the system. We're going to recreate it exactly. And it feels like it. And they also got an incredible cast. The Mandalorian and the girl from Lyanna Mormont from Game of Thrones, the most badass.
Yeah, she kills it.
Character, you know, she took out a giant as a child. But yeah, so they got these two really good actors leading the way. The rest of the cast is fire too. And the first two episodes have me real excited about where it's going to go, because knowing the story and knowing how engrossing it is and how fun it gets and how wild it is, I can't wait for more people to get to experience this story and kind of see what their reaction is. because in the gaming community, we argued about the and what it meant and shit. You know, like, it was a fun story. It's a really interesting plot that develops out of this.
Yeah, I like the direction the movie's going in. So, what do you mean that, like, people had different ideas of how the story was, what it meant, the ending and shit?
Not what it meant, but it was a divisive ending as far as whose side do you take in the when everything falls out? Or, you know, who do you think is good and bad, or what would you do in certain circumstances come to pass?
Gotcha. So you think you're going to see how that translates over into the show now?
Yeah, I cannot wait. As this show develops and people get to meet more characters and get to see all the little things and hear more backstory and all of it, it's just like, man, this is such a fantastic story. I can't wait.
Yeah.
And then the other one I do want to shout out before anything is Physical 100 is the best competition show that I've seen in a very long time. So I don't know if you remember me telling you about this one, but there's this show that came out of, I think it's Korean. It's called Physical 100. It's on Netflix. And they were like, we're going to do these physical tests and we're going to take the 100 best physiques we can get into this competition. And we're going to have them all compete against each other in a very, like, they definitely went for the Squid Games aesthetic a little bit, but they also went for some epicness. And they've got, like, bodybuilders that are multiple time champions. They've got Olympic competitors, boxing champs, Sexy Yama, who was in the UFC, the UFC fans, is one of the people. They've got YouTube personalities, cheerleaders, a pitcher for the Diamondbacks. They've got a crazy cast. And you know what? Also, like the Korean equivalent of SEAL Team 6, I guess it seems like, this sniper dude that everybody knows, when they see him, they're like, oh, Agent H is here. Oh, man. I don't want to mess with that guy, you know, like that. And it's crazy because their personalities, they're very humble about it. They're all like very complimentary towards each other. They're still competitive, but it's got a different vibe to a lot of American shows where everybody's like I just watched the Ink Master Paramount season and everybody on that show is like, I'm coming for their necks. I'm going to betray everyone. I can't wait to screw that person over. And in this one, they're like, I've chosen this person because I really want to see how strong I can test myself. You know, and it's like, damn, bro, classy competition. But when they get into it, they really go at it. And it's just a really interesting concept.
Well, where does it take place? It's like, it's with Japanese?
I think it's Korean.
Korean?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, but you see over there, they take competition a little different than over here. Over here, everybody's snaking their way right to the top.
Yeah.
Over there, they're like trying to do it honorably.
Well, you know what, too? What's funny is they have the honorable ones, but it's 100 people, so there are some. Like, one of the contests, like, if you win the advantage, you get to choose your opponent. And, like, the dude that got first place, picks the next dude similar to his build and that came in the closest to him and goes, I'd like to test myself against you. And then it goes down the line, and these people are all picking real tough challenges. One guy's just like, who wants to face me? Anybody? You know, like, they're doing stuff like that. And then a couple of the dudes are like, where's the smallest woman I can find in this room? I'm gonna compete against her. So it does happen, you know, but it's just funny. And I can tell that Netflix knew what they had with this, that this is some gold, because they dubbed it right away. So for people that are turned off by the fact that they'd have to watch a show in subtitles, it's dubbed. It's well dubbed. It's done well.
Gotcha. I think I'm gonna have to check that out.
Please do, bro. I'll tell you, like, Lou, watch it. Everybody that we know, throw it on. Just watch the first episode and let me know what you think, because I was super entertained, and I have a feeling it's going to be one of those.
Gotcha.
Can you dig it?
You're listening to TFP, the fan's perspective.
So, another thing I wanted to talk about, this has been heavy in the news right now, is the protest going on at what's being called Cop City. So I'm not going heavy into the details of it, but basically there's been a standoff between the police and the protesters. There's an attempt to build this giant training facility in Atlanta, and the small gist of it is it's going to cost about $90 million. It's going to be built on like 85 acres of forest land. There's a lot of protests against it. There's already been people have been shot. Someone's been killed at the protest. It's been ongoing, just the usual typical mess. So just to lay that all out there. But that's not really the angle that I wanted to go at this particular story with the details and all of that on that side of it. I'm just looking at it from the side of there's so much money being spent here, $90 million. There's the more than just the effort. They're like really trying. They're not standing out there fighting protesters and people get murdered because they're not going through it. They're going through with this. Mm-hmm. So there's all this money being spent. They're going to wipe out a huge section of the forest. They're going to build this mock city, which is ultimately going to be a training facility for police. But I'm thinking, what if they got right to the point where they were about to do the training stuff and then they all just turn around left and then we just gave that whole city to the homeless people? I think that would solve a really big problem. Hey, here you go. We'll move all the homeless people in. It's all yours. Have fun.
85 acres of land. It's got a farm on it, which was a prison labor farm, apparently, that they took advantage of. But they've got a lot there that they're going to build a bunch of buildings on it. They might as well. You know, you could solve, maybe not completely, I don't know, but you could do a lot for homelessness.
I'm just
if
saying.
If you were to commit $90 million to any project. So, you know, $90 million is a lot of money to try and resolve that sort of issue.
Yeah, and I think I know you mentioned that a big portion of the money has been private investment into this. So, you know, more power to you. People can invest their money the way they want. But I'm just think, imagine what that would do. Would that be enough to put a massive dent in the homeless community or the impoverished community over there?
I would think so. I think I saw something about they're putting a $50 million investment into addressing it from, federal money. But I do want to mention that private money is coming from, like, it's basically massive corporate donations, I'm assuming, because the Atlanta Police Foundation's board is filled with executives from nearly all of Atlanta's big-name companies, like Delta, Waffle House, Home Depot, Georgia Pacific, Equifax, Wells Fargo, and UPS. You know, it's like a who's who of corporate Atlanta. This is from an article on 11alive.com. It's like a local one. Following the money, who is paying for $90 million Atlanta police training facility? So I just wanted to mention, you know, it's the way they got that money. It's not like it was crowdsourced. It was probably massive donations, which would explain why there's such a protest movement against it as well.
So
you would think if they were able to collect that from the people that it would be like,
well, that's what I was gonna say.
People want this.
That's even worse because if you think about it, in that case, just the companies you named to pool money together and come up with $90 million. Just imagine what that could tackle, you know, used in another direction.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth thinking about.
And ironically, it was started as a response after this is from a NBC News article, but after the anti-police violence protests of 2020, Atlanta officials promised that a sprawling police training center would be integral to the reforms that residents had been demanding. So it was like, well, if you want these reforms, we're going to spend almost $100 million on all this new land. We're going to make them a little mini city to test all their shit out on. Next time you protest, they're going to be ready. Like, that's how they're going to address the problems. I feel like it's that's not exactly the right solution that anybody that was protesting was expecting.
No, that's definitely the opposite approach of what we're looking for and hoping for. But there's also another side of that, right? So some of the protest complaints were the damage it's going to do to the forest, the local habitats for the creatures there, pollution due to the bombing. But the other shit that is downright a little bit scary is that they're ultimately trying to make it more efficient for them to be able to move through the city and I mean, you're building a city to what? What are you invading? You know, what You're knocking on doors, like these people's houses. So it's just a little, there's a little bit of scary feeling there to that as well. I could see some tense feelings between the locals community and that, situation.
There's a bit of a dystopian sense to it. And then, I don't know.
Also, what is the big donor? What is their kind of an angle on it for them? Are they going to protect their property more? Is there going to be more cops outside of Home Depot when the next protest happens?
Yeah, you know, Waffle House really needs to make sure that.
Is Waffle House going to be solidly protected because their windows got fucked up last night? Is that what this is? Like, I just wonder. It's behind the scenes. What the hell is all that about?
Yeah, I'm also sure it's a massive tax write-off, too. You know, we're donating to this nonprofit police-supporting organization. There's a lot of good that comes as a corporate donor for something like that. I just don't see... It doesn't seem like something that I suspect most of the people there were interested in. But I'd have to take a deeper look, I guess. The craziness of the activists getting the whole shooting of the activists and... the back and forth, the he said, she said of who did what. We've seen this sort of shit happen before, so I'm always skeptical of, you know, just taking any version of events offhand. But it's just crazy. You know, these people have been there for a long time. I saw the Daily Show went out there. They're, like, doing meditation. It doesn't seem like the type of situation where that would get to a point where police need to fire on the protesters. But I don't know. I saw one, you know, I saw a clip. So I don't know, but
maybe though,
I'm pretty skeptical whenever I hear about, you know,
it could protesters be, though, being that they meditated peacefully so that they could build up enough chi so then they could charge the police line full force.
Right.
Guns blazing. Fist and rocks blazing, maybe.
Kamehameha, bro. But yeah, they did reverse meditation. You get hype.
I was just thinking about that guy who was talking about the animals riding each other and targeting people. And I wish we had that clip to play for people to listen to right now.
If the animals formed alliances and united, they could take down humanity. What if the beavers built waterways to get the alligators closer?
That's one of the things you said. What if beavers, this is if animals work together to go against man, and beavers worked to build dams to get water so that closer to people's homes so that alligators would be closer to us. But
one thing, that TikTok was hilarious.
Anyway, one more thing to bring up real quick. I just wanted to mention, I saw that Stephen King had basically sold the rights to some of his material writings for $1. And I thought it was a super cool thing. I just took a little peek into it, and I guess he has a program called the Dollar Babies Program. And in this case, they give permission to these students to make a film, but it's a non-commercial film, so they're not going to make profit off it. But it's kind of like a dream come true for the kids. These are all kids who are fans of Stephen King, and they get the opportunity to work on, you know, one of his stories. And create something about it. So I thought that was pretty awesome for Stephen King to do this Dollar Babies thing and let these kids use his story for one freaking dollar.
Since 1977, it's been around. So that's pretty dope. And I didn't know about it. He does put some heavy limitations on it, which I think that makes sense. If I'm letting you, you know, film my creation, my story. And he's had some issues with some, you know, versions of his stories that have been commercialized. I could see why he's protective of it. They are heavily restricted as far as protections in terms of nobody's cashing in. But you can present your film at a nonprofit as long as it's under 45 minutes. You can present it online, only 2 minutes of the footage. You know, there's things there. But you can really, if you're in film school, I'm sure that it would be great to spend $1 to be able to shoot one of Stephen King's, even his short stories or a novella. He's got so much great work. Dude never stops churning out craziness, man. It's always good. So really cool concept. Good on Stephen King. And shout out to the fact that, like, horror is kicking ass for the past couple of years.
Yes. I love horror. Yes, yes, y'all. So before we head out of this one, you know what? Just a quick quick recap. We went down on Sunday to see the Left Reckoning, Our Revolution.
This is Revolution.
Majority Report crew. Ben Burgess.
Give them an argument.
And mother effer, we got there 1 hour late for the meet and greet. So we were all excited about to go see the MR crew and Matt Leck and them and say what's up to everybody and Emma and Sam. And we show up at like 6:05 and we realized, oh, the meet and greet just ended. Okay. But, you know, they were all still hanging out there, which was cool. But at that point, I felt like, you know, they just spent an hour greeting everybody, and they were kind of, you know, maybe wanted to do their own thing. So I didn't want to run up on anybody. Although everybody was really nice and friendly, the show was cool. I thought the spot was nice, but yeah, we missed the goddamn meet and greet.
We were so late that we couldn't even get the wristbands to sit in the VIP section. So we sat off to the side. One of the, like, two of the people that were sitting on the stage were kind of blocked by a pillar. We kind of screwed this up, but it was still a dope ass show. Everybody was cool. I do think by the time we got there, you could see, like, Matt and Grishkom were going back and forth from the stage. There were people prepping. You could tell they were starting to get into, like, you know, the mode. But at the same time, the show itself, there was a very relaxed vibe about it. Like, you could tell they've done a few live shows together, yeah, or that they were well practiced. They were very comfortable, and the crowd was into it. It's a crowd that's there for them. They were there for the crowd. It was really fun. It was a dope. It was a dope show.
Yeah, I liked that spot. I thought it was very well done. So that was awesome. But anything else you want to get off your chest before we get out of here?
No, that's it. Good show.
If you
can't wait
with
to
us,
get John Boom back, shout out to John Boom.
Shout out to John Boom. You know, he'll be back on the next one. Shout out to Vamanonos yeah. Digital. Don't forget to follow J4 Remy, Remy Say on Twitter, and follow me at Charlie Tricks. Wherever you want to, I'm on all platforms.
Peace.
And we are out.
I'm a rap liver. You can't quiver. The skills is infinite. A critical trait like DNA traced to function within my space of well-being. It's quality.